Welcome to Rage Game Network Podcast. Welcome to Rage Game Network Podcast. I'm Andy.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ben.
Hey. Yo, Ben.
Technically, today is Tuesday, so...
But you're hearing this on Mother's Day, so happy Mother's Day!
Yeah, we warned you, by the way, last week, so if you didn't get your mother anything, shame.
Shun the non-believer. Sorry, I just dated myself so fucking hard.
So, moving on. Connor's working today, that's why he's not on, and... I guess that's why Ben's here. But Ben
has something exciting to talk about.
I think it's just because I wanted to talk about stuff. And you're like, hey,
let's do a thing.
Let's do a thing.
Yeah, man.
So we got some news today.
We do have some news. Ben, you said you had some D&D stuff that just came out.
Yeah, so there's some D&D stuff a couple weeks ago, or maybe about a week and a half ago. It was announced that D&D Beyond had been purchased by Wizards of the Coast.
I hope they don't fuck things up.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people are saying. They're unsure about what this might mean for things like subscription prices, but hopefully the biggest hopeful thing is that with Wizards actually owning them is you might possibly get something like a discount or an actual code for when you buy a hard copy book to actually not have to pay for it a second time, which would be great.
Right, like if you buy the hard copy, then you have a code in the hard copy to also just own it digitally.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And possibly a more integrated digital tabletop, so people don't have to use another service, something like Roll20 on top of D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
That it could all be integrated together and then have your maps coming directly from the books. We have those nice pictures of maps in books. If we could have those integrated into a tabletop, so once you've bought your book, you start your campaign, and you can use those actual maps that come.
Oh my god, that would be awesome. Nice.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
So I think that would be really good. I think there's a lot of good potential there. I do know that they'll also hopefully get more personal feedback from people. They currently do stuff through the Wizards of the Coast website when they do their kind of testing material. They'll release it, and then like a month later they'll ask for people's feedback. So if that goes through D&D Beyond, you might be able to reach more people with that
would play be
test
cool.
material. Yeah. And your kind of results and what people feedback on.
One of the things I liked, somebody suggested on Three Black Halflings, and I know we've talked about it, was a customizable DM screen for D&D Beyond.
That would be really cool.
That would be fucking amazing, because all you'd have to look at is your screen instead of being like, okay, you know.
Yeah, that would definitely be a great help, is to have
something. You mean like a digital screen?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
So that like I can look and easily see all your stats together on one page without having to go to each player's particular one.
Right.
Instead of like, because I know that some DMs will like create an Excel like piece of artwork to be able to like input everybody's stuff and then.
Yeah.
It's so fucking complicated, right? To like just have it put together for you.
Exactly. It'd
be so nice.
So, or even just digital versions of the DM screens that they put out for the different adventure books.
Yeah.
Because the adventure books, like the ones I'm used for Curse of Strahd with y'all, it has the random encounters for what you guys will face as you're traveling between things. It has a map of Castle Ravenloft on it and other things.
Oh, that's cool.
That are handy for me to have.
Right.
So if I could have digital copies of that on D&D Beyond, that would be super helpful.
It's like one less thing for you to carry, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing kind of going in D&D news on the whole. A couple smaller things. We've got a couple new books coming out that were announced for this summer. We have Radiant Citadel coming out in June, and they just announced the Spelljammer. setting that's going to be coming out, and that was announced and will be coming out in August. Spelljammer, hugely popular, I believe in third edition, a little bit more sci-fi feel, travel between the planes, particularly to the Astral Sea there. Radiant Citadel will focus on the Ethereal Plane, which is something we really haven't gotten either. So you've got, you know, you've got a little bit of your sci-fi in my D&D, as you will. So if you're interested in either of those are coming out this summer. There was also a tease for a new starter set to be coming out. That was teased right towards the beginning of first quarter this year in the background of some Hasbro announcements for the upcoming year. We've gotten just confirmation this week that that's going to come out in July this year. And the adventure for that is called Dragons of Stormwreck Isle. The starter sets are always great. I love both the initial adventures that's in the starter kit and the essentials kit. This is probably going to be the first one in a different location rather than Phandalin, being that it says Stormwreck Isle and Phandalin's currently a landlocked location. So this might be a better starter set to add in to get your players into things like Ghosts of Saltmarsh if you want something with pirates, or Out of the Abyss, or the iconic Tomb of Annihilation on the island of Chult. That's just kind of speculation. We don't really know anything about what the adventures is, but if Stormwreck Isle, I'm going to assume you've got some boat travel, something like that. So definitely, that should easily tie into those three adventures. So we'll see what that is. I'm sure I'll probably pick up a copy because the starter kit adventures are always fantastic.
Yeah. I would love to play something pirate. We were just talking to our buddy Kenny 2 weeks ago now, and he's in a campaign currently that they're playing. They're all online because their DM is immunosuppressed.
Okay.
So, but they're playing a pirate campaign. So they're all, you know, there's one is the captain of the ship, and the captain, I think, is also the cook or whatever. Maybe that was a different conversation we were having. I don't remember. But the ship just got attacked by a giant octopus or a giant squid. And they were trying to figure out if it was the Kraken or not. It was not, come to find out. But I guess the way that their DM set it up is they roll for all their random encounters.
Okay.
And they rolled two crit. They rolled two natural 20s. And they rolled two crits, fails. They rolled two natural ones. And so they're not sure. Like, they won't know until the campaign is over which encounter was which.
Ooh.
So, like, they're pretty he's pretty sure they've already encountered one of the nat 20 rolls, because it was like an enemy ship was coming to attack them and they were getting ready to battle, and another ship came and sank the ship before they had to interact with it. And they're like, we're pretty sure that was a nat 20.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And they got to loot the entire ship.
They got to loot the whole ship. Yeah. So that's such a brilliant way to do it, too. I love that. You know, because you're at sea for however long. You know, like what we're playing, it's in the middle of the woods. And you're like, you could very easily run into a pack of kobolds or werewolves like we did, or like whatever.
Right.
You're in the middle of the sea. What are you going to run into? Right. Yeah. Or like a storm, maybe. But like, you know, to roll all of that and have it be diverse. I love that.
Well, there's wind and elementals and stuff like that.
Sure.
But the only storm I can think of is a tempest. And those are really high leveled.
Yeah.
But you've got all those crazy things that live in the ocean or off the coast of things.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting option. You've got, on the like the grand scale of things, you've got something like the dragon turtle.
Yes.
I would love that.
Those are tough.
Yeah. It'd be fun to fight, though.
Yeah, they're usually a good. They're not crazy.
Okay.
But
it would be something different.
I
mean,
that's if you use the stat block as written. I looked at some stuff for a pirate possible campaign, and I slightly scaled them down, but I did them in, like, groups. Kind of like, you know, because, you know, turtles, real turtles, lay a shit ton of eggs.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So if we make them smaller and I throw five of them at a party.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Dragon turtles, they're considered...
Hey, no.
My bad. They're considered the ones that carry the land on their back in this?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so I like you could that. Have like, you know, you might need to not have them all attack, but like if you have a couple of varying sizes, you'll be like, oh, there's a small archipelago in the coming up.
Yes.
Wait like, a minute.
Oh, we're not coming towards it. It's coming, towards us.
Yeah.
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 That's awesome.
And it's like they have a steam breath.
Yeah. Steam breath. Oh.
Yeah.
So
scald your skin right off.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And their defense is obviously ridiculously stupid strong. High.
Yeah. Yeah. Their AC must be impossible.
Basically. Actually, yeah, I want to check.
I want to know, yeah.
Okay.
It reminds me, I've never heard of a dragon turtle before, but it reminds me of the lion turtles from Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah. Same idea.
Yeah.
Same
idea. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Give me a second. I'm going to actually look this up while you guys are chit-chatting about other stuff.
Sure. Did you have any more D&D stuff?
That's kind of it. Okay. D&D stuff in terms of like news. But speaking of D&D stories, we had a rather interesting session the other week.
Oh, my heart hurts.
Yeah.
Before we started our session, Ben's like, we're gonna open some trauma today.
Emotional and I was like, emotional damage.
Oh my god. I actually almost started crying. It was terrible.
Hold on. I have a little bit of news.
Yes.
The Monstrous Compendium.
Yes.
Volume 1 is currently free on D&D Beyond.
Woot woot.
Spelljammer, you know. The one we were just talking about. Download. Yes.
Heck yeah. Very cool.
Right now.
Yeah, so we opened up a little bit of backstory. My character, whose name is Westra.
Go again. Figure. It's not my campaign.
Yep. But my character basically confronted somebody. Oh my god, what is his name? Izek.
Izek, yes. Captain of the town guard in Vallaki. Yes.
Yeah, she witnessed him dragging her wife away several years ago. And so she finally confronted him about that and found that it was not necessarily all his fault that her home was destroyed and her children are dead. Yes. Trauma. Yay. So she's like, what'd you do with my wife? And he's like, I literally have no idea where she is now. Sorry, bro.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's fun. But we did learn a little bit about him. Yes. About,
very complicated character.
He had summoned the power that he, like, really did not have 100% control over.
Yes.
And that's kind of what happened to Westra's home, is that, like, the power kind of went apeshit and just did whatever it felt like.
Yeah, so y'all were kind of roughly able to piece together that Izek is a warlock and had gotten his powers at a very young age.
Yeah.
And when he came to your village and took your wife, was a bit less experienced with his powers, and that he had been searching for his long-lost sister. And thought with a case of mistaken identity through various visions that it was your wife.
Mm-hmm.
It was not. And the party found that his actual sister is their person they've been charged to protect of Irina. So that was a lot for a lot of people there.
Yeah. It was just like, how about a can of worms? How about seven?
Yes.
Like, oh, okay.
I read a number of things outside of the main source material, and he can just be played as such a really interesting, complicated character, and I kind of wanted to throw that in because it seemed like the best way to kind of tie something in with your backstory.
Yeah.
And I think actually the next person's character who's up for the emotional damage might be Rusty.
Ooh.
I think we might be getting into.
I kind of figured a little bit.
We touched on Gribbins, on Connor's character a little bit.
A little bit.
But like we don't actually, like it was above table. It was above table conversation. And yeah. So like we don't, like we as characters don't actually know what's going on with Gripen. We just know that like he goes into a rage and weird shit happens. Yeah. Man. Like,
I mean, we did kind of discuss a little bit,
but he doesn't really know what's going on because he did. He did the best and worst thing as a player when a DM asked for a backstory, which is that he did nothing.
Yeah.
By the time I said I had set a deadline. So that was all up to me.
Yeah. And,
I think his might be the toughest for y'all to get to. There'll be some parts here and there, but I think it'll depend most on what routes throughout Barovia y'all choose to explore.
Mm-hmm.
But your two are definitely going to be kind of the more forefront. But I think there's a strong potential for his to come out. There's going to be a choice that the three of you are probably going to need to make towards the end that will tie into all three of your stories.
I like
that's
that.
That's all I'm going to say with that.
Okay. I feel like we might stumble upon Gribbins because, man, we've been pulling at the tethers.
We have a little bit. But like you said, he really is like Gribbins not sure what's going on, but he kind of sort of somewhat has an idea and he chose not to share what his idea was, right? Like,
but he also hasn't seemed too prone on possibly searching out more of that,
yeah,
as to why it is. So we'll see if he decides to push on that.
There's another thread
that's out there that can lead you to some answers that's not as direct.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got that out there. I don't know if you're going to decide to follow that or not.
Guess we'll have to figure out when we get there.
So I did find it.
About the Dragon Turtles.
Dragon Turtle. Dragon Turtle is a gargantuan dragon. They are neutral. Their armor class is 20.
Oh my god.
Their hit points is 341.
Shut the fuck up. Are you serious?
Yes. Their land speed is 20 feet.
Okay, that's not crazy.
Yeah, but you probably face these things in the water.
Yeah.
Which its swim speed is 40.
Of course it is. So does it say what its challenge rating is?
Is it 15 or something
like that? It's 17.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Meaning that in theory should be balanced for a party of four characters of that level.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
For us, no.
Hell no. What are we at? Like level 6 right now?
So just to give you an idea how much damage this bastard can give you.
Can I tell you guys a secret? We're talking about dragon turtles. We saved a turtle today. It was trying to cross the road and it was so tiny. It was like barely bigger than a quarter. And it was trying to cross the road, so we put it across the road and we felt better about ourselves. Sorry, continue.
Yay! The dragon turtle won't kill you.
Yay!
So, now check this out. Its bite attack is 3d12 plus 7.
Christ.
Its claw attack is 2d8 plus 7. Its tail attack is 3d12 plus 7. Also, you have to succeed a DC 20 strength saving throw to not be pushed up to 10 feet. Or knock prone.
Oh my god.
Actually, and knock prone. Sorry.
Pushed and knocked down.
Yeah.
Okay. Strength saving or be pushed up to 10 feet away.
What's the damage on that breath weapon, though, bro? I think that's
steam breath.
The steam breath.
Is a 60 foot cone.
Which is larger than your typical adult dragons of a 30 foot cone.
Yeah.
Yep. It is a DC 18 constitution saving throw or take, wait, hold on. Area, I said, taking a Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. If you pass, you get half damage.
Yes.
If you fail, how much?
It's 15 d6. Oh, that is half of full fall damage.
Oh my god. Yeah. If you rolled 6 on every single one of those, that's 75 HP. Oh my god.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah.
That is so intense.
Yeah, and that's a con save. So
that's a con save.
So unless you're, you're okay if you're sorcerers and barbarians, because you'll have that. Not counting sorcerers hit die, but like you at least got proficiency in that saving throw.
Right.
But
right, and on top of that, he can use it, you know, at any point, but there is a recharge of between 5 and 6. So if you roll a 5 or 6,
that's still 20, a 30% chance that you'll get it back every turn.
Yeah. But I've also, you know, listened to podcasts where the dragon doesn't get his breath weapon back.
Yeah.
So, you know.
May the dice be ever in your favor.
Yeah. Seriously. Oh, yeah. My
dice
God.
Christ be with you.
And with your spirit. Stop.
That's a NADPOD reference for y'all.
I love it. Anyways, should we talk about Mother's Day really quick?
Yeah.
Go for it. No.
All right. Fine. Fuck yeah. Or we can talk about Mother's Day.
Okay.
So since Mother's Day is, well, technically today, as you guys are listening, we thought we'd talk about a couple of fun things to play with your mom and maybe the rest of your family. Cheap or free. Yep. So there's Mom Bingo, which can be fun. You basically fill the bingo squares out with just the most common things that she says. So it could be phrases, it could be words, it could be words that she uses instead of cuss words. Like my grandma always used to use, oh, sugar. Shit like that. And then you play bingo.
All right.
And whoever wins gets a fun free prize. Hopefully it's your mom. You can also play mom trivia. That takes someone setting it up, though. So basically, like, sitting down with mom and figuring out what her favorite flower is, or her favorite color, or her favorite hobby, or her favorite place to go shopping or visit or whatever. So that can be fun. Make that, like, 12, maybe 15 questions long, and then whoever gets the most questions right wins a little prize. One of my favorite things is this or that. You could play mom this or that. So just guessing, would mom prefer this or that? Would mom prefer chocolate or roses? Would mom prefer golfing or soccer? Would mom prefer, you know, whatever? And it goes on like that. So then you say this or that. And you choose, and whoever gets the most correct, again, you could get a little prize.
Nice.
Just like a couple ideas. Something fun to do with the mom-o. I know when we see mom, we'll probably play one of her favorite games. Andy and I are visiting her for the weekend. But one of my favorite things, well, it's one of my favorite games, but mom loves to play it with us, is Dixit. And I think we've talked about it before here.
Yeah, I think we all played it.
One night,
game night.
Two Christmases ago?
Yeah.
Sure. It was whenever we had Zach here.
Zach was here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she really enjoys that one. Now that she's played it a couple of times and she gets it, she likes that one. But some of the ones that my mom likes from ages past, we used to play a game called Malarkey, and it's basically a bluffing game. Okay. So there's 6 cards. You can have up to 6 players or 6 teams if you prefer. And the group is asked a question. So for example, why do the sides of milk, like gallons, have indentations in them? Right? They used to. I don't know if they do anymore.
I don't know.
And then you shuffle all the cards up and you pass an envelope to each person. And then, you know, each person opens up their envelope and it either tells you to bluff or it gives you the correct answer. And only one card has the correct answer on it. And so you go around in a circle and you give an answer, whether it's the correct one or not. And then at the end, everybody votes for who they think had the correct answer. Right. And it's all weird, like obscure trivia questions. Right. There's another one. My favorite one when we were playing with my cousins is, why do the Scots wear kilts? and I don't remember the actual answer. What I do remember is my cousin Joe came up with the most elaborate story about how the needle of the earth was angered by the Scotsmen of old and so punished them to wear skirts for the rest of time. It's like, the what?
Good.
We thought that was the most hilarious thing. And then we also like, there's a dice game called Farkle. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes. Yeah.
I love that game. It's a good one. And they play it at like a lot of Renaissance fairs and stuff. Because it's just an easy, you roll to get points. And if you make a roll that you don't make any points on, you lose all of the points that you've scored already for that round.
Yep.
Right. And then if you get no points, everybody yells, Farkle! And then you are shamed.
Shame.
For a whole round. Shame. So that's what my mom and I like to play. What do you got, Ben?
Well, we were talking before we started recording of like game memories for Mother's Day. And yeah. So I remember when I was younger, we also do puzzles. My mom loved puzzles. She collects puzzles based on the paintings of an artist, Charles Wysocki.
Yes. Okay.
She collects those puzzles. We did a whole bunch of those growing up while I was real young. My first system I ever had was Sega Genesis.
Of course.
And we occasionally would play the two-player mode on Sonic the Hedgehog 2, where it's basically just a race between the two players for the level. And we played those. I think that one only ever had like four levels. So like I played the hell out of like those four single levels.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome though. That's such a fun thing to do with your mom.
Oh, let's see. I do have memory of playing Tetris and Street. What was it? It was called Puzzle Fighter.
Oh, Turbo. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's based off of the Street Fighter characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
wasn't it like Street Fighter characters, but like still also Tetris, like two player?
Kind of, yes.
You have to race to see who can complete the puzzle faster.
No.
Wasn't it?
No, it's like
I thought that was one of the modes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where you got the two colors and you got to match them, or you can get like a conglomerate of the same color and then break that color.
Yeah, it was like one of those various like Tetris ripoff, so it wasn't completely the blocks, but it was more of a matching stacking game.
Yes.
Yeah, because you had Dr. Mario, and then Sega did the same thing with Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. It's basically the same idea, but you can like make bigger, they're gems.
Yeah.
And you match the colors, and you make these giant fucking gems and just wipe out the other player before... Yep. You know, the Tetris thing where it fills the entire screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had somebody showed me a strategy where you can never lose because it's micro. It's just breaking things in a combo.
Yep.
Consistently.
Yeah.
So,
used to cheap out wins is what you're saying?
Oh my God. You just had to be faster than the other person dropping them. But it
doesn't matter if you're cheesing, a win's a win.
A win's a win.
A win's a win. It's cheesing it. It ain't cheating. It's a strategy.
Exactly. Yeah. Although it might make other people a little angry.
Yeah, like my brother and my sister.
Yeah.
You can't use that strategy. That's cheating. No, it's not. It's a strategy.
Yeah.
And then everybody else got pissed off, like my mom and my dad, because I would destroy everybody.
And now we don't play that game anymore.
No, I'm just not allowed to use that strategy anymore.
I can't even remember the last time we played, though.
No.
I think I've played maybe twice.
Yeah. It was good, though.
Yeah. So... Well, that's fun. I hope everybody has a chance to do something with their moms for Mother's Day and maybe play a game. And
yeah, and if you didn't do anything, you need to make up for it.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, we'll be right back. Yu-Gi-Oh!
And we're back.
Yeah.
I should have said something about a... Headphone warning. Yeah, fuck it. Whatever. Yeah,
headphone warning.
Just like spoilers from Batman. Oops.
Whoops.
Yeah. So I guess this is why I wanted to come on, is I recently went back to playing Yu-Gi-Oh! So I had gotten back into playing Master Duel, which is their new online game, and using that kind of prep to get back into the game more fully after 7-8-ish years of not really playing at a local scene level, and about 10 years, probably about 15 years from playing competitively.
Oh.
I played semi-competitive, locals, attending a few regionals back in high school, mm-hmm. and college, got out of playing for a bit, came back, played locals for a bit, left, and really want to get back more into it competitively. So this past week, I went to a couple locals at one of our local game stores.
Support your local stores.
Yes, support your local stores. So I went on a Thursday night. I went 2-2 with the deck I was running. I went back on Sunday hoping to find a little bit different crowd. Sunday crowd was a lot more lively and a little bit more variety in the types of decks people were running, and I went 3-1.
Nice.
Oh, very nice. So,
very well done. A little
bit better. Lot of variety there. I've been trying to keep up on the news of what's been going on at the more national level scale for what decks are popular. They had a huge tournament in Charlotte, North Carolina, back at the beginning of April, which had a whole bunch of coverage on that. And then they had the past 2 weeks, they had one in Bogota, Colombia, and then in Guadalajara, Mexico this past week, which received far less coverage. Actually had a long phone conversation with a friend, called to catch up. We hadn't spoken in years. Mm-hmm. And they asked what I've been up to. I was telling the same stuff about getting back into Yu-Gi-Oh! And how I'd been keeping up on stuff. And like, for someone who doesn't play card games or really tabletop games, like, you know, you don't expect to get mad over something, a hobby that you don't enjoy.
yeah.
But after telling them about the pitiful level of coverage that Konami did of the Latin American events mm-hmm. compared to the American events at the same level, it's astounding not to be like, this is crap.
Yeah.
How do you cover? So they do a couple different levels of tournaments. You have regionals, you have right. nationals, and then they have a whole separate way to get to kind of a national or world level that they call the YCS, or the Yu-Gi-Oh! Championship Series. So at a regional, you're looking at about 150 to 300-ish people
okay.
on average attendance yeah. for a regional. Because usually they'll do one, and you know, people from like the nearby two or three states, maybe you get some farther travelers, will come to a regional. And then from a regional, you go to nationals, and then hopefully on to worlds.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, with the world it's been, we've not had world tournaments. We've not had big tournaments.
Right.
And then
right.
they have another series, the YCS. And if you win at a YCS, you can kind of skip that line and go right to worlds.
Okay.
So they're bigger scale events. So you're looking at easily 500 to 1,000 plus at some of these.
Okay.
I don't remember the count from Charlotte, but it was a pretty good turnout for, you know, being on the East Coast. It was the first major one we've had this year and in several years. And they went through and they calculated what decks people were running. They gave like a little pie chart based on what strategies were popular. They did highlights on all the different side events they ran. When it came to Latin American ones, they just posted the players' pairings from each round. No information on what decks they were running.
Holy
so
shit.
Having so, just the pairings of their names does nothing.
No, somebody could have had the most genius combination and you're never going to know about it because they didn't do any coverage.
Exactly. Even and not if, only did like, they not post only post any of the extra stuff, when it came to the one in Bogota, Colombia, they were posting those pairings so late, like hours late. So you're talking man. Like you're on to the next two rounds by the time you're getting the other pairings posted online, not that they have any information.
Yeah.
They didn't even post the winner till the next day on
oh
Twitter.
Oh my God. Jesus. Are you serious?
Like, come on, guys. But they gave full coverage to the event in Carolina. Like,
yeah.
Down to like even covering the side events.
See, but that's what I would expect, right? If you want people to be passionate about, you know, a sport or a game or a hobby or you know, whatever, you want to be as detailed as possible, because if you want people to really and truly invest in something,
yep,
you want to be like, here's all the exciting nooks and crannies of this thing, and we want you to experience the whole thing. Here's how these people do it all the time. They might as well be professionals.
Yeah.
Here's how they do it, yeah, right? Here's how you can be like them, right? Yep. Here's how you can spend more money on this thing we want you to spend money on. And they have literally nothing but like this person faced this person.
Yeah.
And then they both moved on to face these two people. And that, like, how fucking boring is that?
Yep. Drop the ball on their lap.
That's like if you were watching the Olympics and you knew, like, you didn't get to watch. Exactly. All you knew is that, like, okay, America faced Brazil in soccer.
Yep.
And then what?
And then what? Yeah.
Right. Like, what happened? And then you didn't know who scored how many points. You didn't know, like, which player got the goal. You didn't know which player had a brilliant play. You just, like, not even the ending score. You just were like, okay, Brazil won. End of story. And?
Yeah, what was the points? You know, who played? What was the statistics? Yeah.
Right, what were the stats? Who had just a genius move that helped their team? Who, you know, what call did the coach make that won the game? You know, nothing.
And the winners of both those tournaments in Latin America, fantastic. The winner from Bogota, Colombia was Christopher Lofton. He was actually from Indiana. He went from the United States down to Colombia to compete in this international tournament.
Okay.
Like, that's a great story. Yeah. You want to highlight that for your company.
Yeah. Right.
He had previously competed in the one in Charlotte. Didn't do great. I don't think that he even made the top 32. But he said straight up, like, I saw his Twitter, he doesn't have a huge amount of followers. It's since gaining all his socials since he won this event. And he basically said, yo, I didn't do as great as I wanted, but in 2 weeks in Colombia, I'm going to go all the way. And he did it.
That's awesome.
Like, that's awesome. And the guy
who
won.
It's such a great follow-up story, and we did not get it at all.
No. Yep.
The guy who won in Guadalajara, this was his fourth YCS win since 2014. He's been competing at this level for 8 years.
And doing well consistently.
And it's like,
does anybody even know who he is?
Unless you're hardcore, no.
Yeah.
Because they don't cover the events.
Oh my God.
He got some coverage in some of the ones he did, I think. How 2016, depressing is that? Something like that. He competed in like Houston, but he's actually the guy who won in Mexico is originally from Colombia. Okay. So he went from Colombia to Mexico, but he's competed in South America, in Central America, and in the United States over the course of 8 years.
Yeah.
And his achievements in Latin America are not getting covered.
Not recognized at all. Yeah, that is crap.
I it kind of brings me to a point, like, I know that esports is a big thing in its own, you know, right.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was, like, more coverage sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because as much as I don't pay attention to that stuff, sometimes I want to.
Yeah.
Like, I think
sometimes it would be nice to highlight it here, even, and you just can't necessarily find anything on it, you know?
Right. Me and Bob randomly, Bob is my brother. I think we've been over this. I think we randomly ran into, like, the finals on a freaking Tetris tournament. I know that sounds stupid, but me and my brother
were exciting to watch. Yeah. I mean, so when we went to Just Games the last time, they got a new Tetris machine and it was very old and they need to fix their buttons, but we had so much fun. And so, like, and people who are watching us play, we're getting into it. So, like, why wouldn't it be the same for a tournament? Why wouldn't you want to cover that? Why wouldn't you want to make money so the tournament can keep going? Right. Like, exactly. And where do you get that money and the funding from? Is from viewership.
Yeah.
It's
They have a dedicated fan base in Latin America, because you see a lot of the top players, from what I've seen, have competed at those events multiple times throughout the years. You have a good number of people that will compete and be at that level, but there's a lot more kind of ebb and flow, it looks like, over the years. But it seems like some of the people, at least in some of the Latin Americans, they're at that level and they're staying at that level because that's their hobby and they're passionate about it.
Yeah.
So Charlotte was a regional competition. You said.
No, it was the same YCS level.
Oh, it was a
yeah.
Are you what?
So, okay. They are the same level of competition.
Wow.
So I don't have the numbers for Charlotte for how many players they had, but in Columbia they had like 530. And then Guadalajara, Mexico, 1,200. 1,200 players.
1,200 people, and all you got were pairings. Oh my God.
Over double.
I get it on the first couple rounds. It's a 2-day
event.
Yeah.
Both of these, all of these are 2-day events.
I get it on the first couple rounds, but like once you get to the the top 100 players, you should be getting every nitty gritty detail.
Yeah. So you do, they do Swiss.
It's embarrassing.
Swiss rounds for most all of day one and usually part of day two. And then for these large events, it's typically you're going to your top 32.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me that information on the top 32 like they did in Charlotte. I want to know what decks are doing well. I've got the stats here for Charlotte. They've got stuff like a couple of the... Obviously, this won't mean much to the two of you, but like for people who are into Yu-Gi-Oh, the Prank Kids strategy was in 10 of the top 32 decks. The Brave or Adventure Token Engine, which is a token-generating card set up to bring out monsters from your extra deck, was in 17 of the top 32 decks.
Oh my God.
The Destiny Hero Phoenix Enforcer package for bringing out the Phoenix Enforcer Fusion Monster was in 18 of the top 32 decks. Eld Lich, the popular zombie deck, was 5 of the top 32, as was the Sword Soul Tenny deck. Floanderese was in 4 of the top 32. Like, these are things like that they're calculating those stats so that you,
these are
wanting to be a top-level player, can understand what you're most likely to face and what tends to be the most powerful decks.
Yep. This is what the best of the best are doing, and this is how you can prepare to either beat that or emulate it.
Yep. Almost. And we had a great new structure deck launch in between Charlotte and then these two in Latin America. The Strike of Albez structure deck, I just picked up 3 copies of it, and I'm still kind of learning that strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategy through that deck and the line of cards, the Branded and Despia series of cards, that those decks were what topped both Guadalajara and Bogota. Andres Torres, who won in Guadalajara, and Chris Lofton, who won in Bogota, run very similar Branded Despia decks.
Okay.
It's like, this is, you know, and you didn't cover it. A lot of people expected this to be a huge part of what would be in the, you know, the metagame or the, you know, the community, as you will, is what's the next wave of popularity. And they were right, but, you know, we didn't hear more about it on that scale because they didn't cover it. It's a really, really cool, unique engine that's bringing back Fusion Monsters, which if you're in the OG days of Yu-Gi-Oh! Was, you know, they were powerful and they were kind of tough to summon. These new decks allow you to summon them easy, and they have crazy effects.
Yeah.
And it's real cool. I've got 3 copies of that structure deck, like I said, to build with. And, you know, it's getting coverage, you know, on the independent circuit. I'm seeing a lot of YouTubers talking about it and excited about it, but, you know,
like
the people that actually use it are winning.
Blue Eyes White Dragon there.
Yeah. Yeah. You get, actually you're getting some more, not that it needs it more. Blue Eyes keeps getting new support and all sorts of new things to this day. Yeah. Actually on Sunday, opposite of Blue Eyes, I faced a Dark Magician deck.
No shit.
Funny enough, run by this guy Brandon I know. I met his fiance years ago through photography. And I'm sitting there. I'm getting ready for the first round. I'm talking with guys about trades. It's like, oh, hey, Ben, how you been? It's Brandon. You remember me? I'm Jess's fiance. It's like, yeah, I haven't seen you in forever. And he was running a Dark Magician deck. Dark Magician has a ton of support. And actually combined some of the new Dark Magician stuff combined with the stuff in this new Albaz structure deck can make Dark Magician like a, maybe not a tier one or tier two, but like a competitive level deck, which Dark Magician hasn't been that since it first came out.
No. Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I can remember like if you ran a dark magician, it was definitely support for something else. It was not.
Yeah, your end goal was maybe dark paladin if you were doing right. that, or you know, it was a general spellcaster theme, but dark magician had the most support at that point, so he was
right
an ace of sorts.
So right. I'm trying to figure out why the U.S. would have so much more coverage than the Americas.
It's a bigger sales market. But
sure,
the rabbit hole goes deep. I went deep in on Reddit on this, and I'm not a Reddit person. No. Yeah.
Well, so I looked. Obviously, Konami Digital Entertainment yes. is the organizer for all of this, right? And they're based in Japan.
Yep. They cover Japan. They cover the United States.
And then that's Europe, it.
Europe and Australia a little bit, not as much as the U.S. and Japan. And then, like, Latin America and that even
But if you're hardcore, less. You're hardcore. So, like, even if you're in U.S., you're studying everybody's technique.
To a point, the one separation, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is kind of weird in that they have two major formats. They have what they call the OCG, or the original card game, and then the TCG, the trading card game. It's roughly the same thing, but Japan gets their cards at a slightly different release schedule.
Okay.
In the United States, typically the U.S. and the rest of the world get their stuff about 6 months after things have come out
sure.
in Japan. And sometimes there's still some differences in what comes out in the sets.
Okay.
And that, which means that those in Japan and the OCG, so also Korea, China, so basically any of the Asian market, have a separate ban list for tournaments for what is and isn't legal at any given time.
Okay.
Because they have a slightly different card pool.
Sure.
So they do get a decent amount of coverage, but in terms of your international coverage for big events, it's the United States and Japan, but really the U.S. for the most part. Canada, not so much, because Canada gets lumped in with all our stuff. Like, Canada never has their own YCS events.
It's just the North America.
It's pretty much, if they have ones in Canada, it's either typically in Toronto or it's in we don't know anything about Canada in the United States, but big city.
Canada is the fake United States.
Big city,
the other side of the country,
border, yeah, one side of the country or the other. That's pretty much where you're gonna get YCS if it's right. in Canada. And I don't know that they do regionals. They might there, but pretty much it's, you know, they kind of lump them in with us and call us North America. But really, it's the United States and the handful of events they choose to have in Canada. So
sure.
they can say it's international. And then they lump Central, South America, and Mexico all into one.
There's so many countries. Yeah. I don't get it. Yeah. That's like, it feels like so much. It feels like too much. Because you're looking at the attendance for Charlotte.
Yeah.
Which was how much you said? A couple, like several hundred?
No, that was Mexico. I don't have the attendance numbers on Charlotte. I probably should have had them.
That's okay.
Like, I would say it was probably still, between the two of those.
But then you still have an event in Latin America.
Yeah.
That's 1,200 strong.
In Mexico. Yeah.
I don't, like, I don't, it's, no, it, this makes me so angry, at and least, I literally like, know I can almost get nothing about
Europe,
Yu-Gi-Oh.
I can get lumping Europe together because you're
the countries are smaller. They're close yeah. together.
You can get to places easily by train, yep. you know.
People cross borders all the time in Europe yeah. by train, just for, like, whatever. They want to go to breakfast, and they live in Spain, but they want to have breakfast in Portugal. Sure, whatever. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
so, like, that's easier that they'll only do a couple things there, and they you know, consider Europe its, you know, thing, but that makes sense. And that's kind of how Europe has been for all sorts it's of what, things.
Yeah, Europe is like that for Heck, tons they, of they different things.
They even mixed all their money. That's why we have the euro. Like, that's
right.
fine.
Right.
Yeah. So, but,
oh my God.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I had a great experience on the Sunday locals. Thursday was a little bit weird, but I could definitely tell a lot of the people there were more training for some regional events coming up.
Okay.
And there's another YCS in New Hartford, Connecticut, Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more hardcore of a crew. And I wasn't really ready for it because it was my first locals back.
Okay.
In like
so it
years.
Was more like, would you say that it was more intense because people were like, had an end goal in mind?
A little bit.
Versus I think Sunday, was which like people were just there to have fun.
There to have fun.
Yeah.
More casual players, more hardcore. And I guess that makes sense. Like a Thursday night, it's a weeknight. You probably have work in the morning or you got classes in the morning. So less likely to come out the Sunday afternoon.
Right.
So, but it was a good experience, both ones. I am currently running a deck called Sky Strikers, which is an archetype that was more popular a couple years ago when I was looking at getting back in. I was like, I want something that's not top tier, but like decently competitive and not super expensive if I don't want it to be. And this seemed like a good fit. And it's also kind of cool that they just actually are releasing a mini manga around the lore for the Sky Striker cards. Typically, oh, cool. The lore and the all the manga that we've gotten for Yu-Gi-Oh! Was manga that was taken from or adapted into the animes.
Yeah.
And recently in the V-Jump magazine, they are starting a new thing called OCG Stories, where instead of talking about the Yu-Gi-Oh! You know, universe in terms of where, you know, from the regular Yu-Gi-Oh! GX, 5Ds, you know, your characters from those, Yugi and Yusei and Jaden and your popular anime characters, you're actually going through the lore that's established in the cards through their artwork.
Which, cool.
For people who are not familiar with Yu-Gi-Oh! In particular, Magic does some of the same thing, that in their sets they have storylines and, you know, that's based around a certain set. And the time period that they establish her. Yu-Gi-Oh! Does the same thing, but rather than through their sets, it's through each individual archetype.
That's cool.
So
you get to like do deep dives. Deep dives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of it's like established through the cards, and there's some lore and stuff online, and others it's really just, all right, we've got these series of images from all these characters appearing on these same cards together on the same theme. And then it's just fan created of like, all right, what happened here? What happened there? So
I love, dude. So do they consider some of the fanfic as canon, depending on what it is?
I don't know how much they do. There was definitely some lore and kind of semi fanfic around the Sky Striker series, but now we're getting an official story. I picked this. I think maybe I don't know if I sent the meme to Andy or I sent it to one of my other friends. It said, getting back into Yu-Gi-Oh! With a competitive deck. And it was like the Drake meme where he's like, yeah versus like, nah.
Yeah.
It was like competitive, nah. Getting into back into Yu-Gi-Oh! With a waifu deck.
Yeah.
Yes. So Sky Strikers focus around two main characters, high school girls, Rose and Ray. Ray is the main one, and that she's a high school girl that ends up being a mech pilot in the middle of this world war. And so your goal through the deck is summoning the different mech armors that she wears. And each card of those mech armors have a different effect.
Okay.
To allow you to get around your opponent's defenses, power yourself up, as well as kind of give you different opportunities to win. So it's a control style deck. That's not super heavy on having to learn new mechanics or stuff, which was something I was really wanting to. I want something streamlined, simple to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's simple to learn, but with like a high difficulty for mastery.
Sure.
What I was looking for. And I had a lot. I have a lot of fun running it. And seems like it's going pretty well.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Very cool. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I have never done a local anything. Like, I would love to go to Just Games and play, you know, whatever it is they play on Saturdays. They sometimes have D&D stuff. They sometimes have, like, the TCG games. Like,
I think they just do Magic. Because, funny enough, I was in there the other day and I needed more sleeves. And they don't sell Yu-Gi-Oh! Size sleeves.
Of course not.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a lot of places are, like, Magic only. Though I did see on their calendar that they were doing a pre-release for Digimon, and I'm like,
oh my god,
bro, Yu-Gi-Oh's like the second, like in terms of like actual play, it's like second behind Magic.
Yeah, I like, don't understand the comeback sales of Digimon
with Pokemon, but like that's not a huge competitive play.
I don't understand the comeback of Digimon. We were at BJ's Wholesaler last week, and they have one of the Digimon games for sale.
Deck packs, yeah,
or like one of the deck packs. Like, I'm like, why?
Yeah, I don't know where that came out of.
Who was that obsessed with Digimon that is making a comeback right now? We're like, literally no one. Yeah, I'm so confused.
The original card game for it wasn't good. That's why Pokemon was helped stay there for so long.
Right.
Right.
The card game and the artwork was great, but like the Digimon was like...
Digimon...
The only thing they had better was their anime.
I always felt like Pokemon came first, right? Before Digimon.
Yeah.
I always felt like Digimon was a knockoff.
I think that's how a lot of people felt.
It was like the cheap reproduction.
It was a straight up ripoff.
Yeah, but that's what I mean though. Like it was they took something that was already good and they tried to make it better and they didn't really like.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
It just ended nice up being try. Like the second Thanks popular for playing. Of Come a again. Run of things in the same way that, you know, we've got a whole bunch of, you know, magical girl anime that are roughly, you know, knockoffs of Sailor Moon.
Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is impossible to watch now, by the way. Like, I tried to, and I got through the first episode and a half, and I was like, no. I can't watch it again.
Were you watching, like, the original cut or the Sailor Moon Crystal that they...
No, the original.
All right. Try if you can find it. It might still be free. Crystal. It's basically the original one. It's remastered, and I think they redubbed it, so...
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
I do kind of love the campiness of the original.
Yeah. I might try it again. I might try it again just to see if I can get through it because I do remember enjoying it when I was younger. I don't know.
Yeah.
I struggled.
There's a lot of 90s cringe.
Late 20s something year old. I was like,
There was a one I was trying to rewatch was Gundam Wing. And I get through part of the first episode, and I'm like, I can't watch this.
I can't.
This is unwatchable.
Yeah. But there's so many good new anime. I just finished, because I watched dubs. I know a lot of people hate on that. But
Thank you, God.
You know, I like the dubs for some places. And honestly, like, I need to be able to multitask. And I can't do that if I'm watching subs because I have to truly read it.
You have to actually read it, yeah.
And I've just finished the last part of Demon Slayer. They finally got that last episode dubbed. They were doing that like week-to-week release for the English. And oh my gosh, so good. If you haven't watched that, have either of you started that?
Mm-mm.
No. Oh, so good.
So that's a problem in our household is that if we were going to watch the same anime, sometimes we have to watch it separately from each other.
Yep.
Because Andy prefers dubs. I prefer subs. I really enjoy. I tried to learn Japanese at one point and failed miserably because I tried to do it by myself. But I just really enjoy listening to the Japanese language because it's different. I think it's very cool. I think it fits the ambiance of watching an anime better than the English.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the sense. Like, I prefer to sit and crochet or sit and do something crafty. Or, like, if I'm going to work on something that needs to get done, I'll sit and watch TV while my hands are moving. I can't do that if I'm watching anime because I'm too busy reading the screen. Yeah. And then I'm like, well, I'm not accomplishing anything right now.
Well, exactly. You watched Fruits Basket dubbed.
Fruits Basket, I watched dubbed. So there are some things that I will watch dubbed because that's how I watched it originally. And to switch for me is very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Right?
I found that. So I was like that with the Dragon Ball Super anime because I watched all of Dragon Ball Z and original Dragon Ball dubbed.
Okay.
And going back, I tried to go back and watch it subbed and I couldn't. Like as much as I liked some of the voice actors, not all of them. I wasn't a fan. I do like the music of the original score, though.
Mm-hmm.
And Funimation, when they did put Dragon Ball Z on, they actually did the cut that's got the American dubs, but it has the original Japanese soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, which
most of the time I liked better. There were a few things that were like iconic that I wish I had the American one, but that's kind of a nice...
the intro?
Yes, intros... but they did some nice theming, which I didn't realize because I'd only watched the sub, and they used some of the motifs and themes from the original Dragon Ball, reused it in Dragon Ball Z, which makes a great memory thing of like, oh, the last time I heard of this track was when this happened. And if you look at the scenes, like they kind of parallel a similar emotion or style.
Sure,
like,
yeah. Shoot, I love that.
You miss that context.
That's like that. The thing, like if you watch a movie that has musical motifs like that,
yes.
You don't catch it the first time, but the second time through, you're like, wait, they played that melody in this scene and in this scene. It's either like a character's theme or it reproduces, exactly. Like you said, that emotional feeling, or it brings to mind like a certain memory because you need to remember this particular sequence of events to make the scene you're watching more impactful. Mm-hmm. I love the way that music is used in media that way.
So I watched Super. Actually, I watched that subbed because there was such a lag between when the American dub was going to come out.
Sure.
So I'd watched all of that subbed all the way through. And only for Super can I not go back and listen to the English in a lot of it because I don't enjoy it.
Right.
Even though it's the same voice actors that I loved before. And there's a few, like I like it in the movies.
Yeah.
And I like it in like a couple episodes here, a couple episodes there. And I think it just comes out to like, interestingly enough, like the good episodes are the good episodes in either language, but the bad episodes, I can at least tolerate them in Japanese.
Yeah. So I think that's what happened. Like, I don't like switching, but I think that's what happened with Fruits Basket is that when they originally produced it, it was terrible. It did not follow the manga at all. Like, it got to a certain point and then just kind of went, right? Like, veered right off, right? And so they kind of, they could have made a second season. They could have redeemed it, and they just were like, nobody. They canceled it, I think, after the first season. But then when they remade it in 2019, when that first season came out, what made me so happy is that for the dubbed, they got 90% of the original voice actors to come back and do the dubbed version. And I was like, this is nostalgia on a silver fucking platter, and I love it. I loved it so much. And they obviously based it more solidly in the manga, and so they got all the way through it and made me very, very happy. But then that's what happens with like a lot of the subs. I'll watch it in the Japanese first, like Sword Art Online. Andy and I have both seen it, but not together. I don't like watching the dubbed version. Uh-huh. I can't.
I
watched it in Japanese first, and I will never watch it in English now.
I can't watch it. I can't watch a lot of it, but you know.
You get to Elfheim and Andy loses interest very quickly.
Yeah, it's like, what the fuck am I watching?
Click.
Let's watch something more. I don't know. Shit. I totally lost track of what I was gonna say, but it's all right. We kind of lost track of where we were going.
Where we were in time, yeah.
Anyway, so...
we did another Oops Anime episode.
Yeah, kind of. Well,
Not completely, but still. Yeah.
But, guys, remember to go to RageGameNetwork.com to go pick up a t-shirt, coffee mug, banner, you name it. You grab yourself one. Also, let your friends know that there's a podcast out there that is not for children.
Correct.
That you should be listening to. And you can also go to the top right corner of our homepage, and there are little buttons to our social medias, and click those and follow, like, subscribe. You know the deal. Just
buy yourself a coffee mug.
Yeah. And yeah.
Buy your mom a coffee mug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And tell her never to listen to the podcast because it's probably not good. Well, for everybody to be listening to. Whatever.
Anyways.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
And if you rage it, we game it.
Bye.